Some economic news today. Unemployment claims rose unexpectedly this week, the first time in several weeks, even though broader trends do point to a slowly healing jobs market. One of those trends, perhaps, factory jobs. They grew in March at close to the fastest pace in 7 years. Most of the growth there came from exports and from businesses selling to other businesses. But could part of the increase be an emerging trend, American companies bringing overseas factory work back to the U.S.? U.S. companies, especially smaller ones, have long complained about poor quality from factories in China and other developing countries. And now, with the cost of labor rising overseas, some companies are finding they can actually make more money making their products in the USA. We want to take a look at American manufacturing with Brendan Koerner. He wrote about this new trend in Wired magazine and joins us from the studios of the Radio Foundation in New York. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, Robin.
And you give us an example, Sleek Audio. This is a high-end earphone maker. They're based in Palmetto, Florida. But they've been doing business in China, and it's sort of a telling tale. Take us through some of the issues they were having.
Sure. This is a company that basically makes very, very high-end earphones, and they contracted with Chinese manufacturers because of the cost over there. It was a fraction, really, of what they could pay in the U.S. to make each piece. The problem was they had so many flaws in products, they had to scrap entire shipments. They told me one entire shipment they had to junk, and it cost them $2 million in lost sales.
Right.
And they would go back to China and say, well, let's fix this. And the Chinese factory would promise to do so, and the same quality problems would arise. And so on a flight back to the U.S. after one of these very frustrating trips, the owner turned to his son, who works with him, and said, I can't do this anymore. Let's bring it back to the U.S. And that's what they did. They found a manufacturer there in Florida near their headquarters. And yes, it does cost about 50% more per piece to manufacture there in the States, but they think they make it up in terms of not having to throw away so many flawed pieces.
That's remarkable, because double the price, and yet they're happy with the decision. But there were some other reasons why working with China was difficult for them. First of all, you mentioned they were on the trip. You know, they had to fly back and forth. But there's also sort of, you know, a different approach to deadlines, as you write, a lack of lackadaisical approach to deadlines. So they were also spending a fortune air freighting products?
They were. The problem is for small to mid-sized companies, they really get lost in the shuffle. These contract manufacturers in China pay the most attention to their biggest clients, the real multi-million dollar companies, the Apples of the world. But these, you know, the real guts of America's technology sector, places like Sleek Audio, they get kind of pushed to the side, put on the back burner, and all of a sudden, you know, it's 2 weeks to go until they have to debut some product at a big trade show, and the factory isn't done yet. So they have to spend, you know, exorbitant sums on air freighting. They have to miss out on sales from those shows, and it's really, really bothersome for these companies.
Well, and big companies like Apple build their own factories, so they're sort of running the show in China, so it's a completely different experience. Give me another example of a company you met and a problem they came across and decided to bring their product home.
There was a company called Hercules Networks, and they make kiosks for recharging cell phones. And they were having a really difficult time getting their products delivered on time. And when they were delivered, there were lots of quality flaws. And so Paul King, the CEO of the company, started looking at American suppliers and American manufacturers to handle the construction of those kiosks. And amazingly, he found out that if he redesigned the kiosk in a certain way, he could actually get the manufacturing cost here in the States within about 5% of the Chinese cost. So it really goes to show that if companies are smart about the way they construct and design their products, the gap in between how much it costs in China versus how much it costs here in the U.S. needn't be that great.
Well, and you write that one of the ways that these smaller companies are saving money and redesigning their products is by automating the process more than it already is, relying on robotic assembly lines. Does the fact that they're bringing the product back mean they're bringing the jobs back?
No, it really doesn't. As you noted, when people do bring products back, they often redesign them to minimize the number of human hands that touch a product on the assembly line, because that's where most of your labor costs come from. It's from paying salaries. So unfortunately, if people are looking at this trend of companies reshoring production to the U.S., it's not going to be a huge engine of job growth, at least directly. But it will be a huge engine, I believe, of economic growth, and that should have some secondary impact on the job market.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about labor, because the cost of labor has climbed in China. from about 50 cents an hour in 2002 to nearly $1.50 in 2008. That's still very low by American standards. But again, all these surveys are showing that even though the labor costs are low in China, companies were finding that they weren't saving money. Grant Thornton found 44% of the companies they talked to felt they not only got no benefit from going overseas, 7% believed it was actually causing them harm. But isn't Asia going to, as you write, respond to that?
Well, I think they'll have to. Right now, the strategy for them is to kind of keep costs as low as possible by outsourcing actually domestically within China. A lot of these factories located in the coastal regions are subcontracting work to factories that are inland, where labor costs in particular are even lower. The problem with that is you're creating a lot more risks in the supply chain. You are bringing up, for example, the risk of intellectual property theft, sure, which is a huge concern for many American companies. They feel like they're losing control of who has access to their designs when these subcontractors get a hold of them. So I think that China will have to respond in a way that is not just kind of pushing the problem inland, looking for lower cost, but actually tightening the ship at the coastal factories that have established relationships with American companies.
Yeah. Meanwhile, though, what are some of the benefits and effects of American companies deciding to bring their products back home?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that it's going to be a positive, net positive for the American economy, and the fact that to have more flourishing companies here close to home, even if they're not creating jobs on the primary level in the factory floor, they're certainly going to have secondary effects in terms of, you know, having more capital sloshing around, having more innovation sloshing around as well in the U.S. So that's definitely a net positive. And so I think it's going to make for a much easier time getting products into markets for consumers and perhaps bolster consumer spending as well.
Brendan Koerner, Wired Magazine, a look at how some American companies are moving their offshore jobs back. Brendan, thank you.
Thank you, Robin.
And here's sort of another example of this trend. Whirlpool has decided to build a new plant in Cleveland, Tennessee, to replace an old one, which they were going to move to Mexico. But after doing a study, they decided to rebuild because their workforce in Tennessee is already trained. If they keep that workforce, they eliminate severance pay costs. They found transportation costs are lower. And Tennessee looked safer than Mexico. So are you a business that's decided to bring work back to the U.S. or keep it here? We'd love to hear from you. You can go to hereandnow.org or click through there to our Facebook page. It's Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software dedicated to accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science worldwide. On the web at mathworks.com.
Welcome back to our look at American manufacturing. Before the break, we heard about a new trend, companies that had moved manufacturing to China, bringing that work back to the U.S. because the quality didn't meet their standards, or there was a high cost of missed shipments, or they're tired of flying back and forth to troubleshoot, or concerned about their ideas being ripped off. But there's another reason companies are moving manufacturing work back. It's because America, made in America, sells. Mark Dwight is the owner of Rickshaw Bag Works in San Francisco. His 15-person business sells about $1 million worth of messenger bags a year. He's also the founder of SF Made. It's a nonprofit that, among other things, helps companies set up manufacturing right there in San Francisco. Mark, welcome.
Thank you, Robin.
And we should say that your company, while part of this sort of local first movement, this idea of, you know, asking people to purchase things locally, your products aren't always entirely made in San Francisco. Some of your bags are partially produced in China. Some are completely made in San Francisco. Some of your parts for the bags come from China. You know, so you do outsource some of the work, and then you finish the bags in San Francisco. But I guess the question is, then why not make your whole bag in San Francisco? So you could say that the entire bag was made there.
Well, some of our products are done that way, but some things are just simply too labor-intensive or require expertise or equipment that we don't have and can't afford to invest in. You know, you try and do where you add the most value, and then you outsource to places where you either don't have the competency or can't afford to keep that equipment running full-time, and it needs to be shared with a variety of other manufacturers.
Well, let's get right to the point. I understand that you're a messenger bags, but how much do they sell for, and how much would they be if you made them entirely in San Francisco?
Well, our messenger bags that we build from scratch, we sell for anywhere from $50 to $100, and it's because the bag is very simple to manufacture, so there's not a huge labor component. Our computer bags, which have much more detail, zippers and pockets and things of that nature, we've designed it so that we can outsource part of the product that's very labor-intensive but save what we call the best for last, giving the bag its personality. So we do the final assembly where we add the color and the patterns of fabric at the last step so that we can provide a high level of customization for our customers.
Well, and you've told us that that bag would be about $800 if you did it all right there in San Francisco.
But
yes. Well, what about some of the concerns we just heard about, the reasons that other companies are bringing work and jobs back to the U.S., you know, flying back and forth to China, quality control, and a sense that there's a lot of money lost because there's a different sense of deadlines and such, and we just heard about that.
The further away from what you make, your sources, then you have all of these other risks, and whether it's communication errors, misperceptions of what you're asking for in quality or performance or design. And then, you know, if you've got a long lead time between where it gets made and it finally getting to you, it's very hard to correct mistakes if they show up at your door.
So some companies are actually completely changing the model and putting the entire production of something in one building as opposed to sending it all over the place to be finished. It seems like there is new interest in that. One of our listeners, Dana Hyde, on our Facebook page, mentioned in the ABC News series where a crew goes to a family's home and replaces everything that is not made in America, which, to the surprise of the family, usually turns out to be everything in the house. They replace all of that with things that are made in America. It's a series we've been watching as well with a lot of interest. We'll link you at our website. But our listener Dana points out that while some things aren't made in America, like TVs, you just can't get them, he loved seeing what was available. Are you hearing that from people?
There's renewed interest in getting back to our roots of self-reliance and our ability to make things a mastery and a competitive advantage around being able to make things and being accountable for what you make. But finding what I call a pure play in made in the USA is increasingly difficult. It's a global economy, so in my case, the fabric may have come from some other place, and should I be penalized because there's no one making a certain component for what I make in my own country? That gets to be a little bit of a radical extreme. I think what I'm advocating is that companies refamiliarize themselves with how things are made, how the things that they sell are made. They should be in those factories and be intimate with the supply chain. People have said that we've lost control of the supply chain. And the key to restoring integrity to the supply chain is restoring intimacy to the supply chain and how we make things. And that's where I think America has run astray. Not only have we lost our competency, we've actually developed a fear of making things. Oh, it's too expensive. It's too much investment. Oh, just send that over to that place over there, whether it's China or Taiwan or India, and have it made. And we've almost developed a pride of never making the things that we sell and just being marketers. And I think that's a tremendous disservice to us.
Well, this brings us just briefly to SF Made, which is an organization that you found that helps companies do just that, assess a product's manufacturability, in other words, hooks them up. Can you really find, you know, places to assemble and to print and to do all of those things that put products together in San Francisco?
Well, you can, and there's a variety of goods that are best made locally. They tend to be artisanal food products, artisanal fashion products, things where there isn't a tremendous amount of technology or equipment and where the batches are small and where some of the ingredients are sourced locally.
Do you really think that this movement can even come close to replacing the manufacturing jobs of yesteryear?
Well, I do think that we could go a long way to rebuilding our industrial base as well. If you think about the fact that much of the advancement in the Industrial Revolution comes from automating and mechanizing, that's where many of the larger manufacturers and more sophisticated manufacturers have been able to keep or bring manufacturing back to the U.S. by actually investing in that automation. So it is innovative in process to remove labor and figure out ways to mechanize. And so if we could be focusing on that, we'd still be manufacturing here, and the jobs would be in creating the innovations that make the things that we make less labor-intensive and more economical to make right here close by.
That's Mark Dwight, owner of Rickshaw Bagworks in San Francisco. He also founded SF Made, a nonprofit that helps companies set up manufacturing facilities in San Francisco. Mark, thanks for speaking with us.
My pleasure, Robin. Thank you.
Okay. Tomorrow on Here and Now, a weird thought. What happens to your online life after you die? Who gets access to your Facebook page, your tweet? Also, it's almost too much of a good thing. The Kronos Quartet joins with Bang on a Can to play Brian Eno's music for airports. That's tomorrow. Stay right there. The latest news is next, Here and Now.
Support for Here and Now comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced, Hinckley, Allen & Snyder, where partners have been giving clients practical legal advice for over 100 years throughout New England and now including Connecticut, online at haslaw.com, and the Institute of Contemporary Art on the Boston waterfront. Discover the power and beauty of new art and ideas, icaboston.org.